The following podcast may contain a dash of popular profanities.
A Wiggly World 135.
It's never straight up and down.
It's never straight up and down. It's never straight up and down. It's never straight up and down.
A Wiggly World. Hi, friends. It's me, your old pal Wiggly, in your earballs. Now, I'm not going to be able to listen to myself today, so hopefully I'm coming through. Am I coming through? Can you hear me? I've been wanting to jump on for some time now, but haven't been given that opportunity to sit. In fact, today I might have to cut it short because I'm starting quite late in the afternoon, later than I like to. I normally like to start maybe 9:30, 10 a.m., but as I was eating breakfast today, I decided that I had to watch Burt Reynolds' The End. I don't know if you ever saw that one. The End. It's very hard to look up because normally you omit the word "the" from any type of title, and there are tons of movies with "end" in them. So trying to find The End with Burt Reynolds and Dom DeLuise. Oh, and cute as a button. Sally Fields forever. I love that little cute Sally Field. So here I am, but there was a lot of other things. The fish pond is leaking now, and I have to get out there. A couple other times I tried to sit down and record a Wiggly World. My back gum, where I had the wisdom tooth removed about a year ago. Began to swell up like a pin cushion. It's very relevant to the kids. Pin cushions, you use those, they look like giant tomatoes, stress balls. That's what they sort of look like, in the shape of a tomato. And then you stick your pins in there for your hat pins and those things that everyone still uses. So it swelled up like a crazy thing, so I had to set a doctor appointment. And then I began, instead of sitting down, I began tearing down the, doing some demo. This is a part of the show where anyone that's interested in the topics that it says leaves, because I'm going to talk about my personal life in the beginning here, and then everyone gets bored and then turns off their radio. So I was tearing down this boat shed because I don't really need a boat shed. I used to be able to fit my hot hoopty whip inside of there. However, now that I have this 4Runner, it's far too tall to fit in there. So I began ripping this metal roof off here. It was a double metal roof, and then I ripped down the roof braces, the wood and stuff like that. And, of course, I got Hubered on this thing as well. And there's some more Huber stories as well that I'm not going to go into. Just more switches and more emergency breaker switches on my boiler. Once again, faked out right on the boiler itself. There, I told it. So I was tearing down that shed, and man, I put a toil on my body. So that was one thing. And then yesterday I was going to try to sit down and do it. Instead, I began trying to tear down the one wall of that shed. And this toothless hobo was supposed to come and take all the scrap metal from this, and of course, couldn't rely on a toothless hobo. Imagine that. He told me I could get like $50 for the metal. I said, listen, if you haul this away, you can keep whatever money you get for it. And he's like, really? Really? I could have tore that down in an hour because I'm a roofer. And I was like, well, I probably could have torn this down for an hour if I wasn't talking to you for 45 minutes and set a hammer in here. So that was that, my pincushion mouth. Now, for the swollen gums, I tried to just take CalMag and sit in a timeout, but that didn't tend to heal my my pincushion mouth there. So I had to go to the dentist on my Tuesdays, which I try to get some artwork or, you know, a Wiggly World or music or something like this completed, but that interrupted my day. And then when I got home, some other emergency, I don't know, it's been kind of hectic around here, to say the least. So I have a ton of things. I wanted to do a lot of research for today's show. However, I didn't do any research for today's show. So I'm just going to Free Ball Friday this. And fortunately, it's Friday. So that worked out. I wanted to revisit a little bit. If you remember a couple hundred years ago on my last episode, I was pretty much breaking down my understanding of Scientology, because I don't really, you know, I haven't really spoken on Scientology. I speak so much about the Judeo-Christian Abrahamic religions, basically mostly focusing on what we classify as Christianity. And not necessarily Christianity, but more on the Holy Bible of Christianity, which is the Torah and the New Testament, basically. I thought, well, you know, I'm an equal opportunity investigator of whack-ass claims, so I might as well go. I mean, what's I saved this thing. So, I mean, yeah, you have Xenu, which, of course, now the Scientologists play down as not an important part of Scientology, although these are the upper levels. These are the causes of why we have to get rid of these thetans, which was the whole birth of Christianity out of Dianetics. So it's kind of silly to dismiss it like this, and it's only dismissed because it's so silly and because the morality and the logic and the reasoning of even today's Scientologists, although they don't like to question any of the doctrine. In fact, it's grounds for, well, first trying to rehabilitate people of that sin, but also ground for getting rid of them as being an influence that is wogisms. I can't remember that. There's two different terms for harmful elements, something people. It's out of my mind right now, so forget about it. But where am I even saying? Oh yeah, so you know that's something that many people, any reasonable person would think is whack ass. Even now, the many of the Scientologists themselves. But I found this thing, you know, it's one of these little sayings. It's not you're doing it wrong, but it's just a little type of webism, meme of sorts, I guess. I think someone was using it as their, you know what? I think it was a t-shirt. So it says here, Christianity, the belief that a cosmic Jewish zombie who was his own father can make you live forever if you symbolically eat his flesh and telepathically tell him to accept him as your master. So he can remove an evil force from your soul that is present in humanity because a rib woman was convinced by a talking snake to eat from a magical tree. Makes perfect sense, it says at the bottom. So, you know, that's a great summarization of Christianity. So I'm glad to read that. Hey, I want to thank Greg Watson. Greg Watson hasn't been listening to the show for quite a while, and he feels bad about that. I don't know why. Listen, my wife doesn't even listen to the show. She, you know, she gets in spurts as well. But no need to apologize. And he sent me $10. And I got to tell you, that's the first donation I've had in a year and a half, maybe. So I thank you very much for that. Not saying that anyone else needs to donate. It's just that since I have a part-time job and not too much. Well, that's a big reason why I haven't been doing a Wiggly World. It's because I've been taking on video projects mostly, for the most part. I've actually been paid video projects of things that I hate to do video projects of. Not talking about the one about the printing machine. I'm talking about some other stuff that's more corporate. The printing machine stuff I enjoyed doing. It was fun, and I had a great person to work with on that who filmed everything and gave me high quality material. This other stuff, which I'm not going to name names or corporation names, they give me third generation VHS dumped to the lowest possible quality MPEG compression or Windows WMV compression that you could ever get, and expect me to make, you know, Ben Hur out of it. So I've been doing that, and there's there's a few things that I have stopped doing because I hate them and wanted to spend more time doing music, and one of them was doing video work, because I'm not an editor, I'm not anything to do in video, and I also never wanted to do tech work again, because it you know, takes a toll a bit on my psyche, although I've got to tell you, it's not been that unpleasurable. It's just been taking a lot of time because I get, you know, I see my site go down because of natural environmental causes and things like this, and I'm on call 24/7. So, you know, that's problematic, taking my time. But I say I don't want to do those anymore so I can concentrate on music, and all I'm doing is video and tech work and little to none music, little to none. So here I am. So thanks, Greg Watson. I haven't read these letters. In fact, I found a letter like from a year ago, but I found three letters, so I thought I'd read those now, and then hopefully this will lead into what I want to talk about today. Like I said, I had a lot planned. I even jotted some things down when I was mowing the lawn the other, mowing the bank. Boy, and that's, I think I've talked about that before. It's a lot of fun. Buy cleats if you ever need to do mow my bank here. But, you know, here I am with the lawnmower, and people are walking by, and, you know, I'm typing into my iPod that I'm listening to music on, and, you know, show notes that I want to try to talk about. But like I said, I didn't research anything, so I'm just going to go from what I know, and hopefully that will be enough, and we'll see what we got here. But here we go. Our old buddy Noel, he's gotten off the Facebook, I believe I told you that. And he wrote this here to me. Hi, Wiggly. Let me open the envelope. Okay. And now get out the letters. All right. Jesus Christ. He says here, and I quote, "Hi, Wiggly. I hope all is going well for you this day." Well, probably was in June. "I wanted to show you this article in Scientific American about the evolution of the eye. The link to the story is here." Now all you have to do is Google Scientific American evolution of the eye, and you'll be able to get there. I must say, this goes a lot farther than explaining evolution than Kurt Cameron does with his whole banana argument when trying to explain creationism. Well, I think Kurt Cameron also explains the creation of the eye, which is incredibly too complex to have evolved, by sticking a banana in his eye. But that is just my heathen point of view showing again, he says. By the way, that banana eye thing, I interjected that. I wanted to... Before I go any further, I wanted to talk about my money-making ideas to lend to you to this day. Shoot, I wanted to start with my handy housewife, housewife handy tips on being good at fixing things around your house. Okay, back to this letter. Just wanted to... There is no such thing as a chemical imbalance. There is no such thing as bipolar disorder. Just wanted to forward you, or attention deficit, even when you're speaking. I just wanted to forward you that story to read and perhaps give you some material for your next Wiggly World episode. Can't wait for the next one to be released. Well, you have to wait. Just some other for your informations. I have left the Facebooker. I got kind of tired of how Facebook handles privacy issues, and overall felt I was only a nuisance with my posting of stories on my page. So regrettably, I decided it would be best for me to delete my account on the Facebook. It's mostly a silly stance, I believe, and figure I should stop using something I am against. That's very good. You know, when it's right, or if it's ever right, you can always sign back up. It's not the argument. In fact, I think you could just reactivate your account. Come and go as you please, my friend. Your information's already been shared with the, many advertisers and spammers. Thanks to you and Miss Chiz for friending me on the Facebook, and I hope to be able to keep up with both through email and other methods if possible. Chiz was just asking about you the other day. Thanks again for reading my silly stuff. I wish both you and yours a wonderfully lovely day, evening. Until next time, feel 55% better about myself. Go me. Since I left the Facebooker. That's great, Noel. Okay, so the eyeball thing. You know, we've talked about this before. Boy, if you look at some very early Richard Dawkins television appearances, speaking to a small classroom, he goes through it, you know, quite eloquently. And we've talked about it before. An element that people don't realize is just how we interact with our environment. We have these labels for sight, smell, taste, fart, feeling things, farting, skunk poops. Yeah, so we have these senses, but you know, these are just, that's what science does. It labels things so we can know what the hell we're talking about. But they're just ways that we interact with our environment. As I was thinking about the other day, I was just laying in bed and just reminded again. And I was trying to formulate: is it religion? Is it every religion? I mean, there are some religions that do not do this, but I don't know if I categorize those sentiments as religion, or is it just humanity? Is it society? Is it our aggrandizements of ourselves that want to put people in a void? Instead of embracing the fact that, you know, we are our environment. I mean, this is Alan Watts-y stuff, but you cannot separate the entity, the organism, from the environment. And this is how we interact with our environment, and our environment interacts with us. And these are just methods that we interact with our environment better. And it's simple biology. Read Biology 101, as I have, and you probably will know it better than me. But, you know, I've talked about it many times, how it starts quite small. And then in order to be better at it and be stronger and become stronger and eat more and dominate and be better, things grow, organelles, etc., all the way up to fully developed things. Now, the eyeball didn't just start, you know, hatched out of an egg. I'll read this here. Direct evidence has continued to be hard to come by because, whereas, I'm reading at the end, I think this is the most important, whereas scholars who study the evolution of the skeleton can readily document its metamorphosis in the fossil record, soft tissue structures rarely fossilize, like eyeballs or jellyfish or things like this. And even when they do, the fossils do not preserve nearly enough detail to establish how these structures evolved. Still, biologists have recently made significant advances in tracing the origin of the eye by studying how it forms in developing embryos and by comparing eye structure and genes across species to reconstruct when key traits arose. The results indicate that our kind of eye, the type common across vertebrates, took shape in less than 100 million years, evolving from a simple light sensor for circadian daily and seasonal rhythms around 600 million years ago to an optically and neurologically sophisticated organ by 500 million years ago. More than 150 years after Darwin published his groundbreaking theory, these findings put the nail in the coffin of irreducible complexity. It's great that Scientific American brought in irreducible complexity, a staple of the creationist, now retitled for the past, 15 years as Discovery Institute. Teach the controversy in intelligent design. So it's nice that they put that in, snuck it in there. Puts the final nail in the coffin of irreducible complexity and beautifully supports Darwin's idea. They don't mention that it puts the nail in the coffin of the banana. Natural selection does not, as some might think, result in perfection. Oh, really? I wonder why I have to wear glasses, then, if I'm not perfect. It tinkers with the material available to it, sometimes to odd effects. So, now, the reason that we can see, not just through logically deducing that you go back and you have a light sensor and then it becomes concave and it can sense light better in all directions, and then it has gets a little hole in it, and then it has a focal point. Now it can even let more light in and begin to focus the light, and then it grows a protective membrane over that, you know, and yada yada yada. It's not just through reasoning that we can understand and see how the eye comes about, but there still exist primitive eyeballs on creatures today that are just that. They are non-covered, half spheres or spherical-like segments with a tiny little hole in it that helps to focus light. And there are also things with just light sensors. And you know, it's quite different in plants, but plant can gather light, turns towards it. It's just another way of interacting with the environment. And although it's not considered sight, it is similar into what it gets done. It knows which way to face, you know, with a different type of knowledge, that's for sure. But thank you very much, Noel. That was great. I didn't read the article before. I skimmed over it, saw that looked like the important part, the last paragraph, and reading that was very nice. Thank you. Let's hear from our old buddy, the Dean, who asked me something on Facebook, and I've not had a chance to respond. But yes, you can use whatever song you like. I don't know where it was, and I can try to get you the version without singing on it. So I'm going to try to do that if I recall. Hey, Wiggs, just listening to A Wiggly World 128. Well, that was quite a, let's see, January. This is from February, January 29th. So there you have it. You just mentioned a lady and the cats being neglected story. Oh, yeah. Well, she's not just a lady. She's a person that I jacked off to many times, let me tell you. That video, Give, boy. Hoo-hoo, when she does that wow with her mouth like that, wow, and then she does the back kick, the kickball change. Woo-hoo! You just mentioned that lady and the cats being neglected. And the person who said she should get life in prison, yeah, in the article, a person, oh no, it was one of these faceless posters to a blog. And you are currently discussing prison. This is something I've been thinking about recently. Oh, yes, I was talking about prison. And what purpose does it solve? Is it a deterrent? And if it is a deterrent, it's only just instilling fear in people that would not otherwise, even if there weren't prisons, they probably wouldn't do things that are unethical. And I don't remember all of it. I think it was a little pertinent. I can't recall. This was back in January. Dean goes on, I study philosophy at uni these days, and one of the topics in the introductory module was morality, and another was law. Hey, good. I hope to touch on morality today. What I wanted to do was touch on morality and dogma, and hopefully I'll be able to get to that. And another was law. I made sure to distinguish the two. I must say I came to certain conclusions during my studies. I have become increasingly more anarchist as a result. And I believe you were anarchist before the result. Anarchy in the UK, it only makes sense. I don't see that the government has any right to control people. I see that we have respective democracy because direct democracy as practiced in 5th century BCE Athens is impractical with a large population. So we elect people to represent us in an assembly. But when we have a system whereby a government can make laws we do not agree with and can tell us what to do, it is no longer democracy. And the government has become a tyranny and lost its original reason for existing. So I conclude we should not have any laws and, as a result, no legal punishment. This is especially fitting, maybe, since I made the distinction between law and ethics. Here's an example. My friend was talking recently about distilling whiskey as a joke, but then he pointed out it was illegal. I asked why, and he said it was because the government wouldn't profit from it. Now, this might tie into your discussion on drugs earlier in the show and in previous episodes. I can't see why it is illegal to distill whiskey or why it is illegal to take drugs. To me, these are examples of government controlling the people. Well, if I may interject, and I definitely want to get to the rest of it because I'm sure you go on to further emphasize your point, I don't know if I want to get into this right now. I've already talked about why we need government, especially in the United States, and how it goes. We have our, you know, perhaps you know, local block watches. What this is a little sign that goes on in a neighborhood, mostly in the suburbs, and it says block watch in effect, and it's just citizens that look out for one another's homes or peoples, and if something goes wrong, then they call the police. So then you go up to the police, and then above the police, you go up to the National Guard, perhaps, and then from there you go up to the armies and the militaries and the navies and the things like this. So, and SWAT, of course, is in there. So these are the levels and why, with increasing difficulties, and you go up and up and up, and it's supposed to work, you know, of course, but there's, unfortunately, it's comprised of people. And the same people that would hurt you might be a lower level, or some might argue a higher level of corruption along the way, the police, and you might have some corrupt cops, and that's probably worse than a criminal element, because they're there to protect us from criminal element. If they're getting involved with the criminal element, then morally, that to me, that's a lot more horrible. And governments are in place to help us. Of course, we can't all have a voice because that would just be a lot of people shouting. So, unfortunately, in the United States, we live in what's called a democratic republic, and that's what it's supposed to be. And yes, our elected officials might not represent our best interests. And when it comes to things that we consider to be not harmful to others, and like maybe suicide. That's not harmful to others, but other people have to clean it up. Yet suicide is illegal in a lot of states, according to the movie The End, which is where I get all my judicial and legislative understandings of law. So, you know, I agree with you. Distilling whiskey, I'm not sure if that is legal or not legal. I know you could probably make apple cider. Distilling whiskey, from what I understand from when my grandparents made moonshine, I mean, that moonshine was illegal because it was during Prohibition. I don't know about now. But one thing I do know is that it used to involve high-pressure devices, usually made out of, like, trash cans and barrels and things like this, that could easily explode and then be a danger to others. So, I mean, you can't endanger other people. So I don't know about this distilling whiskey. I know my, you know, people I knew made Applejack and all this other stuff. So, and you could definitely grow grapes and make your own wine. So, you know, I don't know why it would be illegal to distill whiskey, but just from my cursory knowledge of things and my illusion of things, I would say it's probably because it might hurt other people. You could definitely take all different types of whiskeys and boozes and beers and everything else and make your jungle juice and drink that. And that's very, you know, harmful. Drinking out of a funnel in your beer bong leads to, I don't know, a very high percentage of deaths from alcohol poisoning. So those are all legal. So, you know, I'm not sure. And I don't know who it was that said that if a law is unjust, then it's your duty to break it. But I don't think that's a good idea. I think that a system's in place. It may be broken, but it's the best we could come up with now, and it's up to us to change the system from within the system, which might be very, very difficult to do, and not a lot of people are willing to follow those things through in a legal manner for whatever reason, because our life is too busy, because we can't afford it, because of the gross dichotomy between the haves and the have-nots, as it used to be called, you know, in monetary structure. You know, who knows why, for whatever reason, but these things aren't getting fought from the ground up. And it's something that I cannot believe. It's something that I've made mention to many, many times before, in that, you know, once we get these old fuddy-duddies the fuck out of politics, then people, you know, my contemporaries and even people younger than me are in politics now. They'll be taking these seats, and we won't have to put up with this insane bullshit of, you know, banning marijuana because of you know, religious reasons. Basically, if you trace the banning of marijuana all the way back, and it may even start with hemp, and you know, hemp was one of the greatest crops of early America. So if you trace these things back and find out about it, it's mostly religion-driven, and not necessarily, and of course, you know, not really based on Christianity or anything like this, but I mean, it's driven by what we might call, you know, like a right. I don't even know if we would say that. I don't know what to call it. This up, stick up the ass, same type of fanaticism that we see, you know, out of the Middle East in the atrocities that we see going on in the streets with these dogmatic laws and stuff like that. So, you know, I really expect it more from our government, and it's never coming. It seems like it's still just a bunch of people that don't get it. So I don't know. For me, I don't want to go into politics. And I mean, maybe that's a thing. You know, I expect a lot out of Barack Obama because he's very intelligent. Came up against a frickin' brick wall with trying to bring about this change. And so not only did he get blocked, but I'm not sure he, you know, I think, I don't usually agree with Penn Jillette, although, you know, I love his shows, I love his magic, I like his attitudes towards things, and I guess I agree with, I agree with a lot of things, that a lot of his ideas, and a lot of things he says. I don't like his delivery, so I don't really listen to a lot of it. But he said something that I think is right. You sort of have to be like a prick to be a president. I believe that was him that said it. And he might have just said that he liked Obama because he was smart. I don't recall. Well, someone says you have to be a prick and you have to, you know. It takes a lot more than just being bright. It does take being a prick, because if you look at all the pricks that are preventing things from, I mean, right now we're in this thing where, you know, they're going to shut down part of the government because they won't agree to some legislature about fucking getting rid of the tax breaks that were just supposed to be a temporary thing. No one brings that up. No one brings it up that was just supposed to be a temporary thing to stimulate the economy, and it didn't work. I've been unemployed for the past 7 years, 6 or 7 years. That's when I got laid off and I lost all my health insurance and everything else. obviously, it didn't work. I was in a temporary position through an agency, and they could barely get me, you know, a job without, 4 or 5 months in between. So, and I work in a corporate environment, and I know that when it came to crunch time, no one at the top took any type of hit. You know, their company might have, but they didn't change their lifestyle at all. And the only thing that happened is maybe they didn't have as many golf tournaments where they used to, you know, but they still went to them, but they didn't put on as many. But their lifestyle didn't change at all. They got rid of employees. That's what happened there. People at the bottom. So, and, you know, got in cheaper people. To do the same amount of work and more work put on the people that were already there. And that's how it works. You know, that's how it works. So it's ludicrous, this stuff. And anyway. When it comes from now, can you imagine if we didn't have, I mean, they're trying to get rid of people to make inspect food, for Christ's sake. They want these food manufacturers to regulate themselves. Can you imagine? It's already bad enough, and yet they want even less regulation. And that's why I don't think our society is ready for that. I don't think our society is mature enough to not be some type of democracy. And it, I mean, even this is failing, but can you imagine if it was just anybody do whatever the hell you want? Who would clean toilets? And how much would they get paid? Because there would be no minimum wage even. And I know some politicians want to get rid of minimum wage. I mean, it would just, chaos is a fantastic idea. And being an anarchist, I mean, anarchy is a fantastic idea in a utopia, as is anything. Anything's a great idea if you live in a utopia. But I don't see this working at this time with the maturity and illogic and irrational mentality that prevails. Let's continue with Dean Singer. I've gone on too long. When it comes to morality, I realized that we cannot necessarily say that our moral systems are correct, because there is no absolute objective morality. Indeed. It used to be moral to drown witches. It was protecting our children. It was protecting our eternal souls. So you kill a witch, you know, and that was moral. Thus, each person could have a distinct moral code. Person X might think it's perfectly okay to murder other people. Sacrifices going on in the Mayans and things like this. I interject again. Person X might think it's okay to murder other people. Who are we to say he is wrong? He is, of course, wrong by our moral system, but perhaps not by his own. Of course, freedom works both ways. He is free to do as he pleases, and we are free to criticize him for it. How about the person that he killed? Are they free to criticize him for it? But then where does punishment come in? This is where I'm stumped. Exactly. Ideally, people will only be punished if they broke their own moral code. But obviously, this would be impossible. Maybe punishment serves no purpose. If person X kills someone close to me, putting that person in jail does not bring my loved one back. That's very true. So what is the point? Now, it may be to stop him doing it again to others. After all, when someone's moral code is different from that of the majority, we label them criminals or insane and put them away. But if someone could genuinely not reoffend, then punishment serves no purpose. We can do lobotomies, we can do things like this, but then you're in more deep stew. You're a slippery slope. It may deter others from committing crimes like chopping hands off and things like that, I guess. That's already in place. But then, so would a secret police who randomly arrested and executed civilians, or who locked everyone up so no one can hurt anyone else? Very true. Punishment, therefore, should not be a deterrent. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it would be great if we could rationalize with everyone and just say, well, that's a problem. That is a problem that I've spoken about many times. We'll read about things. Murder over here, murder over there, sensationalism, selling newspapers, selling TV shows, selling commercial time. No one says it's wrong. It's so simple. You just say, you know, murdering's wrong. Think about it. And I'm saying that they should say think about it to the populace at large, that they're, you know, conveying this sensational. No one just says this is wrong. And people can ask, why is it wrong? And then we can start a dialogue. But it seems so obvious. But yet people must forget that it's wrong because they do it. You know, crimes of passion, things like this, I understand you get so mad, but It's built on a weak foundation of letting people know that it's wrong. You should not kill people. There's laws against it. So what? I don't care about law. I want to kill somebody. It's built on a weak foundation. It's not necessarily, it doesn't have to be hammered in, but it should be a basis. We tell our kids about, you know, Jesus and Easter Bunny and all these fantastic things since they're from the time that they're born and in a crib before they can understand or talk or do anything else. Yet we don't, you know, instill concepts of morality when our kids are most impressionable. We say, you know, you have to share, you have to do this, you know. But it's usually when we're scolding someone. There are happy things that it could be a pleasure to do. It could be a pleasure to share. It could be a pleasure to be kind, be nice, and be happy. And we don't get to enjoy being happy. They're normally a scolding. Like I said, behave, be nice. What about be nice before someone's being bad? You know, showing the virtues of being nice. You could go into it deeper. I don't have kids, but I would try to do that. Let's continue with the dean. And he signs his name, Dean, comma, the. That's great. I don't really know where I've been going with this because I don't have a conclusion here. But what I will say, and that this actually relates to what you said on the show, I think, I'm going to be reminded what I said, I think, is the prisons are not a good idea. Even if we are to have legal punishments, prison is a terrible idea. I said this recently to my dad whilst watching a Steven Seagal film, who, even though putting lots of dangerous, violent people together in one place was... whoever thought that putting a lot of dangerous, violent people together in one place was a good idea? I think your homeland did, and it was called Australia. Big shout out to all my Aussie friends. And look, that turned out great, I think. Right? Some of the most fantastic people you could ever meet. Anyway, I'm not sure what the purpose... Well, it took a couple generations, I guess. Anyway, I'm not sure what the purpose of that message was, but there is my crazed ramblings. No, it's great. It's great to think about, and it definitely... You know, there was a fella that had some terrible ideas in science, and turned out to be one of the most respected people because everyone picked apart his ideas and came up with fantastically more truthful versions, more closer to reality, and which led them to very prolific life and more discoveries and the scientific method and all that, you know. So it's like I've always said, even back when I've been wrong a lot. That's another thing I want to talk about, how many times I've been wrong, but always open to change my mind, and not like most people, which is plant the seed, let them stew over for a while, and then, you know, eventually, maybe way down the road, thinking about it, hearing it from other people, getting more comfortable with ideas, then changing mind. I've changed my mind being exposed to new information, you know. Of course, I research that information, and I research the skeptical debunking or whatever type of other methodology to test my old understanding of thing, my old way of thinking. And I've changed quite rapidly, definitely open to change as soon as good evidence or better evidence is presented to me. Let's go into Wigglycito. Hey, Wig. Mike Irizarry Jr. Not Wiggly Jr. Wigglycito Jr. Hey, Wig, I know I'm about 2 years late. Well, I'm probably 2 years late on reading this. This is from August. That ain't bad. Hey! 2009. Oh, well. No, 2011. I know I'm about 2 years late, but I finally watched all of Battlestar Galactica, and I even listened to that episode of A Wiggly World when you did when I was done. Oh, you did when I was done. Okay, I did two. I did my initial reaction, which was, I think, a one-off, and then I did another like follow-up in a different Wiggly World, a revisit. That was such an amazing show, despite the fact, I don't want to say that, in case you haven't watched this yet, because you need to see this entire series start to end. I know another person that finally began watching it, and she, you know, you'll spend, you won't have a time, you'll be up for 4 hours trying to cram as many in that you can per day to try to get through this series. It is just that good. I cannot express, I would never expect this out of Siffy. So good on so many levels. And if you like this show, I don't think you could listen to me for you know, sitting here for 3 hours an episode or whatever I do and not like that show. It's just so good. You might be able to. I don't know. And then he says he's confused about the ending. And then other than that, awesome show. I'm going to make my way through the original series now. Oh, no. Well, good luck with that, my friend. If you start with the Battlestar Galactica movie and you decide to continue on and watch the original series, well, then all the luck to you, because that original series, I'm just so thankful that they weren't forced to bring in the robot dog like they were going to. They almost had to do that robot dog, and that would have been just abominable. So, or maybe not. Maybe it would have been awesome. Hope all is all well at your end. I may be in Easton on the 28th, but I'm not sure yet. I doubt that you came because it was like a Noah's flood. I mean, Atnam Pishtim, sorry. See you on the internet and with an S on it, Mike. You're welcome. Well, I can't really read that because I don't know if everyone's read. I don't want to do any spoilers because it's very good. And some parts incredibly moving. Chiz was ruined for weeks after some parts of it. So it has everything. Has everything. And speaking of, I mean, one of the best things it has is just such a great cast. Everyone is casted perfectly. And I saw Callie. She was she played the blind girl, a boyfriend of the Beauty and the Beast type of dog boy character in the towards the end of Dark Angel. So, you know, I told you I finished up with that. So she was in there. and then so many people like Galen, I don't know, I can't remember what his name was. He was, what, in like Superman, the few seasons of, what do you call it, Superman? Smallsville, which, did I tell you about the ending of that? Oh, boy. It was just as good as the rest of the series. Terrible. I don't know when that series was ever good. I don't know how it stayed around for that long, but it did. And probably another fantastic reason to watch Battlestar Galactica is, of course, Katie Sackhoff. Oh, God, she's great in there. And, if, you know, she was in The New Bionic Woman, which lasted one whole season, which was another reason to watch that show, which, I like that show. It wasn't the best show, but wasn't the worst show on TV. And, it took me a little while to get over it. I wish that they wouldn't have called her Jamie Summers. I wish that, it was just a completely new mythology, and then that way you could actually keep those other characters alive in there, and for perhaps some type of mention, Oscar Goldman, all those names. I just wish they could have changed them and made it a continuation of the OSI or something like that. And then came in with these nanotech gimmicks here and said, at one time, it had to be these metal pieces of robot put in you, cyborg and stuff like that. Not iCyborg, but cyborg. That was the original book, I believe. And here's Lindsay Wagner. She was tennis player, and she did a parachute accident. I mean, they didn't do that stuff, so why not an entire new mythology in this? Keeping the old mythology still, just make it a continuation of that mythology, I should say. But Katie Sackhoff, fantastic. She, of course, plays Starbuck in this version of Battlestar Galactica, which was a great little twist there. Does the original Starbuck Is that who's in it, or was it the other fella, the other Adama? Well, anyway, one of those two handsome fellas with the Farrah Fawcett hairs is made a return role. But, of course, Starbuck, the new Starbuck, Katie Sackhoff, is Kara Thrace. And speaking of Thrace, there was a fella that was born in Thrace. He was born in Abdera Thrace, and his name was Democritus. Democritus spoke about there only being two things. One is the atom, and the other is the void. The atom and the void, and that comprises everything. He had philosophical stances. He believed in two types of thinking. One was legitimate knowing, and the other one was bastard knowing. And bastard reasoning was the things that we perceive through our senses. Atoms come together, they form things, we perceive those, and that is our bastard type of experience. More animalistic, more sensing, and then the more genuine, the legitimate knowing was when we thought about that, when we applied logic to it, when we applied our intellect to the bastard knowing and thought about it, applied reason to it, then we could draw conclusions. It's a basis of inductive reasoning, a basis for, you know, the inklings of science, although there was no actual science going on here. This was at a time that it was called science, but it was more a philosophical thought. It was not through observation or experimentation, but through the thought, through thoughts alone, and more philosophical, reason-based science. And I'm not talking about the thought experiments like Einstein did, which could be backed up with mathematics and other types of experimentations. He also did not believe in a prime mover. And some other parts of his philosophy was that he believed that goodness was not inherited. It was not a gift from God. It was not innate. That a measured life could, if you led a measured and tempered and moderate life, then you can achieve contentment. In other words, don't be a jerk all of the time. Through mathematics, he realized that a cone has one-third the volume of a cylinder. He also believed that at one time in ancient history that men, humans could not communicate through language. They had more of an animalistic type of existence. No clothing, no houses, no agriculture. They sought refuge in caves during inclement weather. And slowly they learned one skill on top of another, and this led through reason, and then they got brighter and brighter and brighter. He also believed that the earth was round. And at one time, our universe was just this swirling mass of atoms, all chaotic. And then the atoms came together until they coalesced into what we see before here, the Earth, the Sun, the things like this. He also believed that there were other universes, other planets. Some planets had multiple moons and suns, and some didn't have any. And he also believed that some planets and universes were in a state of decay, and that they had a time of birth, and that they would die as well. And then there was a person that I spoke about before, about being incredibly wrong, yet helping so much, in probably one of the first people to help found the scientific method. Although, once again, this is all more theoretical type of thought experiments, and quite a lot of holding back and suppressing progress in so many ways. And speaking about dogma, this is a dogma that would last, I'd rather not get into times and dates yet. But let's just say it would really keep our understanding of the universe and the progression of science and how things worked and fit together for quite a long time. Although this was probably one of the most influential people and probably one of the brightest people that ever lived at that time, and that is Aristotle, one of the people, if not the founder. My history is not that great. But I believe he was the first zoologist. He began to catalog species. He had his ideas for hierarchies of species. He had places where he was wrong. Places that held us back was that in his five elements. He was, as far as I know, where the origination of the five elements. If you go to some type of soothsayer or astrologer or someone like that, they still believe that there are only five elements because they don't have the periodic table of elements. What are we up to now? 102, I think. So, but back then, so he was only he was only off by 90 something, 97. So. He believed that everything, matter, was made up of five elements. He was not an atomist, as Democritus was. Everything was made out of fire, either fire, earth, air, water, or the void, or ether. And he believed that this ether, he had a separation of what he thought was terrestrial, which is definitely somewhere where the gods would not be. They would not be on terra firma here. And as you got closer to the moon, you'd move up into the heavenly realms, because he still believed of a perfect circular motion of the heavenly elements. So the circular motion of the things around us, the stars and planets, which I believe they also thought were stars, because I think that's what the word planets means. And the sun and the moon were in perfect circular order, orbit around the earth, perpetual, actually, too. So everything was in perpetual circular motions, and this ether was where the gods would reside. These would be the heavenly types of things. So we had problems there with those. Those were two giant stumbling blocks. But he actually, you know, had good ideas about ethics, philosophy, things like this. And he, like I said, he was very, very important. I'm not going to run down full histories of people, just jumping off points for a reason. For a reason. A reason is coming, my friends. And another thing that Aristotle got right was that he believed that the sun was quite large, larger than they had once believed. And he reasoned this because when the sun would come up, and once again, this is a geocentric belief time where the earth was the center of the universe, and the sun and the Milky Way, as they called it, stars, would were all in these celestial spheres. And so the sun, when it came around, would not, the earth's shadow would not be cast upon the stars. But this all leads us to a person that I really dig. And I'd like to consider him the cock king of philosophy, mathematics, physics, astronomy, invention, hydrostatics, leverage. Captain America would be nowhere without Archimedes. Archimedes, quite famous for his Eureka bathtub thing, if that ever happened, when he figured out how to figure out if the king's crown was made out of gold or not, with the lever and floating in water. He is also quite famous for the quote of, "Give me a place to stand and I will move the earth," because he understood leverage. Some amazing things. He calculated a pi, Well, 3.14 was his estimation of pi, which is pretty amazing, considering that he had a, you know, all they had really was fractions instead of decimal places at this time. Still in use today, his invention of the Archimedes screw. It's titled in his name. This is for getting water up out of the ground by using this screw that brings water up out of the ground, encased in a cylinder. He could figure out the area of a parabola. I just had saw a question from Skeptoid fella about parabolas, and here's a guy that could figure out the area of it, and he used this by inscribing a triangle into the parabola and doing his calculations there, which I believe had a common ratio of a quarter. To figure out pi, he used a technique called the method of exhaustion, where he would draw a pentagram and he would draw one on the inside and the outside of a circle. Wait, did I say pentagram? Graham, I meant pentagon. So he draw this pentagon, and he keep adding sides and angles to this polygon. And when he came to 96-sided polygon, inside and outside, then he made his measurements onto that. When he calculated the length of the sides, he got between 3 1/7 and 3 10/71. So that approximately, once again, they only had fractions, but that equals out to 3.1416. He also calculated quite accurately the approximation, and that's another thing. He had these approximations. He realized that it would lie between such and such. Now, this isn't a margin error yet, but it's pretty close to that. It's the closest approximate he could get, and he calculated the square root of 3. So here we have a fellow that is describing the quadrature of the parabola. He is figuring out pi. He also agrees that the world is round, and I think he's the one that surmised that because when there was an eclipse, the Earth shone a circle on the surface of the moon when the sun was in back of it. I believe he may have, there was some talk of him creating a mechanical device that showed the orbit of the sun and five planets. If you wanted to paint a sphere or you wanted to paint a cylinder that had a top and bottom, he could figure out the volume. He could figure out the area of these shapes for you, so you would buy just the right amount of paint. But let's just think about it. Here's a guy that figures out pi, okay? So let's try to think, now unless you know and you're a big studier of Greek philosophers and mathematicians and astronomers and inventors and things like this. Let's try to figure out what year this occurred in. Well, for Archimedes, I would have to put these discoveries, these observations, these mathematics, these formulae, I would say probably 250 BCE, my friends, 250 years before the story of the Jesus would be around. That was Archimedes. Aristotle was probably around 350 as well, maybe 360, 340 to 360. Democritus was, I would put him at around 400 BCE, 400 years before the mythology of Christ would come into this world. 400 years BCE, we have a fella that observes that a cone or a pyramid is 1/3 the volume of a cylinder or prism if they have the same base and height. And all his ideas about multiple universes, the Earth is round, you know, the atoms and the void, the moderation of living a content life, things like this. That's 400 years before this Christ was to live. And then what you have to realize is that Christianity didn't become full-fledged until after Constantine, which is another 300 years after that. So we're talking 700 years before Christianity would become popular and voted on, and voted on the divine nature of Christ. You know, it's just unbelievable. That was almost 700 years before that, my friends. And not to mention Aristarchus, not to forget to mention Aristarchus, who was one of the first people that believed that the earth revolved around the sun. But once again, we still had the perfect spheres, which when we're dealing with trying to come up with, and that was 3rd century BC, so around 280, maybe 270 BCE, approximately where he might have come up with this. And then it wouldn't be until the 1530s or 1540s until Copernicus would then prove that the, you know, more heliocentric view of the universe, actually, they thought that the Earth revolved around the sun, orbited around the sun, I should say. But still, 1540, still talking perfect circles, perfect circular motion around the sun. It wouldn't be until the early 1600s that the dogma of the perfect circular orbits would be changed, and it would be figured out how to actually calculate when certain objects in the sky would be at certain places. It began with Tycho Brahe, a man that had his nose cut off in college and would wear a brass or silver nose, something like this, what you hear applied with some wax you drip on your old nose, I guess. But and that's very important. But Tycho was a fantastic astronomer. He had an island given to him, and he would observe and was very good at observing the objects in the sky, and he would take notes on these. Oh, did I mention that Archimedes wrote in sand? He did like an Etch-a-Sketch. That's how he took his notes. He'd write in sand, and then he'd rub it all out with his hand and then start again on his sand tablet type of thing. But Tycho did not have to do that. And he took very good observations and wrote them all down. But he still believed in a geocentric view of the solar system because I believe that he came to a point where his observations, he didn't notice all this parallax movement that he thought would be happening with the stars. So I believe that he reasoned that either the stars were way, way, way out there, so far away that we wouldn't notice those parallax movements, or that the Earth was the center of the universe. So he also believed that the Earth was too still. It felt too lethargic. I'm not sure, but it was too pokey to be in movement or be doing anything. Now, of course, we know quite differently. If you go to the equator of the Earth, it's moving at around 1,000 miles per hour, plus our motion around the sun, which I've talked about ad nauseum when dealing with ghosts and how ghosts would have to calculate the speed of the Earth. We're right now in America, I think we're around 800 miles an hour. And so ghosts would have to calculate that and match our speed and then try to match where in space they should be in relation to like our floors, to be walking around on the floors. And then not to mention about the 1,000 miles per hour that we're going in orbit around the sun and then the movement of the entire galaxy. So, you know, all that has to be taken into account by something that goes, You know, things like this. Plus, it knows the intricacies of moving magnetic bits around on a piece of cellophane tape with magnetic particles on it to form the words. So we have that. Now, I'm off topic. Let's get back to old Wax Nose here, Tycho. He was very good observing, but he was very bad at mathematics. And because of not feeling Earth moving, he still was maintaining this. He got hooked up with a mathematician, and you might be familiar with his name, Johannes Kepler. Kepler was a very good mathematician. I think he was kind of weird as well. And remember, we're dealing with somewhere around early 1600s to 1620 around, I would have to assume. And he assigned Kepler one thing: make sense. And Tycho had all this data of all these movements and very good observer. Now, Kepler was assigned the task of making sense out of the orbit of Mars. Now, Tycho never got to find out what the results of this would be. Kepler thought he'd be able to do this in a matter of months, I believe. But it actually took him quite a lot longer. And Tycho died shortly after assigning Kepler with this. And what Kepler eventually came out with was that the orbits, the orbit of Mars, was actually egg-shaped. And he also, because remember, he also had to calculate the increase in speed as you round it around the sun. And it got closer to sun and then would be slingshot around the sun and in this ellipse. So this was quite amazing, and this is how long it took. The early 1600s. We're finally over the dogma, the scientific dogma, may I add, that lasted all those years since, 300, 400 BCE. Couldn't Jesus have just told us that we weren't orbiting in perfect circles, and that that the Earth wasn't the center of the universe? In fact, the sun isn't the center of the universe either. It would take until the early 1800s for William Herschel to propose that the sun wasn't the center of the universe. We were all part of a much bigger universe. And it wouldn't be until the 1920s, until Edward Hubble and his telescopes, his more powerful telescopes, revealed that in fact was the case. The 1920s, my friends! You see how this goes. So dogma can last a long time, and dogma does not necessarily have to be related to just foo-foo and superstitions, but can also be related to the dogmatisms in science, and also to show how long some of these ideas take, and also to show that we had frickin' pi, or at least an understanding of pi, 300 years before Jesus would come and tell us that, he's going to return with a sword, and lest those days be shortened, none should survive, and spread his policy of peace, or pieces, I guess, as it should be. Is war ever the answer? Is war a sign of intelligence? Is that how a true intellectual, a true virtuous person, a true person with infinite understanding, a person with compassion and logic and reason, do they resort to war? Or is that person more prone to treat everything with peace and treat everything with understanding? Or are they just going to give up and start cutting people's heads off with swords? In the year 2011, Jesus is going to come back on a horse with his sword. My goodness, friends. My goodness. Last episode, I really didn't talk about some of the more horrible things about Scientology. I mean, I talked about some beliefs, so we had a better understanding of what went on there. But I didn't really talk about the poo-poo. I didn't really talk about claims from former Scientologists who say that they escaped from things that were like prisons and brainwashing. And it's amazing how we will see, and I don't want to call it hypocritical, because everyone's hypocritical at times, but isn't it odd that the things that, say, like a lot of these born-again Christians would say to me, I just wish I could slap you and say, wake up. Those are the same things that I would like to say to them and do to them. And the same descriptions of Scientology as a place to brainwash, as being in a prison held against your will, same things that we might describe Scientology as perpetrating or doing or being is the same terminology that they put on psychiatry. They say you're being held against your will, and talking about one flew over the cuckoo's nest shit that hasn't been around for years, but yet they're still hanging on to that, and then also saying that you're brainwashed by the media and brainwashed by psychiatrists, that they have your best interests at mind and things like this. Speaking of psychiatry, I'm finally, I think. Medicinally wise, found my perfect balance of medical assistance to the other bits that need to be in place as well, both psychological, philosophical, and things like this. Psychological and philosophical, and the other things that I do, techniques, perceptions, things like this, study, everything, exercise. I started dancing on the diaper again yesterday. I busted out the new version of Stepmania. Stepmania 5 is out. If you don't know, this is all free, and you can get a lot of, this is just Dance Dance Revolution, and right now all I have is that dirty diaper to step on, the regular Dance Dance pads. Now that Dance Dance sort of passé, I think that Dance Dance is really my aerobic answer to things. I really can enjoy it. I have tons of music from DDR and from everything else for my Stepmania. And I really enjoy it. And I love cycling through music. And I can always hook my pads up to my PS2, which I have all those Dance Dances and ones for the PS1 from Japan, and my friends and I trade it and stuff like this. So I really enjoy that. I think it's really my key to exercising, much more so than the Wii balance scale and things like this. So I started doing that again, and I, like I said, the medication, I'm finally on. I got off the sleeping aid for when I find myself going too far. I'm still on the Lamictal. I take 200 in the morning, 200 at night. So 400 milligrams of that. And I'm now on Buspar, which, now remember, none of this might work for you. I'm totally off of the beta blocker for anxiety. That didn't do anything for me, and I'm off of the those pink things that everybody takes, Xanax. So those are all gone. I started the Buspar at 10 milligrams. No. Half of 15. Seven and a half milligrams per in the morning. 7.5 at night. Did that for a week. Felt nauseous, going to throw up. I felt dizzy after I would take it. Got a little more used to that. But second week, I started on 30 milligrams a day, 15 in the morning, 15 at night. Really, 2 weeks of very difficult difficulty handling that, and that's another reason why I couldn't do a Wiggly World since then. I've been trying to, you know, get my crap together, get my head on straight. Reduced it to 10 milligrams to 20 milligrams a day, 10 in the morning, 10 at night. Yesterday, I started that. This morning, I feel fine, and it really helps with anxiety. So the Lamictal quiets all the chatter in my brain, does that very well. So now I can create more, be more creative, understand my creations, and not be distracted by all the other voices and chatter in my head. And the Buspar helps with me going to bed at night, and also with anxiety, social anxieties when I have to go to the store and stuff like that. So, and it obviously hasn't zapped out my energies. It just makes me more like the energies I should be doing, because I did my dance dance yesterday, and I also did a demo on some of the shed out there. So I think I'm finally at my good place, medically, medicinally wise. I'm still not, 100% content person, and behaviorally like I think I should be doing. I'm a lot less quick tempered, but it still needs work, and it's still going to be an ongoing process. But I'm happy to announce that. So that's all I wanted to say. I've been reading a lot about El Elyon, the high god, and the early Yahwehists. Yahwehists far before the Christian religion would come into place. In fact, and it's even in 1 Kings 22, 19 through 20, Yahweh meets with his heavenly council, which, of course, El was the high god. In many of the Psalms, El is the name of God instead of Yahweh. El Elyon, El Shaddaiah, El Berith. Many of these gods referred to later as Yahweh in the Old Testament. And I've spoken about Asherah when I talked about Easter and the goddess of heaven, or the whore of heaven. Asherah was the bride of Baal, which we've also spoken about, and the consort of Yahweh. So I've been reading a lot about this. If you didn't realize, this is a lot from the Ugaritic text. Ugarit, very interesting stuff. Please look it up. I bless you through Yahweh of Samaria. How about that? But that's Samaria instead of Sumeria. So check out the Ugaritic text. It's spelled U-G-A-R-I-T. Look up Ugarit. You'll find some very interesting lines, all explaining why I constantly say that the Old Testament begins as a polytheistic religion. Even though it's plain as day when you read the first few paragraphs in Genesis, you know, people still say no. So there's one place to check for that. I'm not going to get into that today. What I did want to get into was morality. What I did want to get into was, firstly, and I don't know how far I'm going to get in this. I might want to cut it short. Maybe I'll get into morality at another time. But I wanted to talk about the reasons why people sing the praises of Scientology, sing the praises of Christianity, and look at those reasons. And I don't know how far I'm going to get in this as well, but hopefully it could go more into something positive to go out on, you know. I like to do things, talk about the Wiggly, the ways that I see things. Way that I see things. I'm getting tired. I'm getting blown out, friends. Let me take a pee and collect myself. For you, no time will pass. I'm back. Hey, before I get into what's good about these things and good things. I want to just say, na-na-na-na-na, I told you so. No, there's a couple things that I've stumbled upon that help lend credence by people that have done a lot more work than I have to some of the concepts I've come up with. A long time ago, when I started Trapdoor, and even before then, a little bit before then, I talked about An End to Prejudice, and I'm speaking about racial prejudice here, and other types of prejudice, not just race-related, but also, dealing with things on an individual level, period. So that translates over into, events, views on things, we were talking about before, punishment, and so it relates to more than just race, and that is, and putting it into prejudice by dealing with things on an individual level. And one of the main mantras was that you could no more have control over who was your mother and father than you can of making the sun stand still in the sky. We are not responsible for our parents fucking. They just, we didn't choose them to copulate and have us when, who, color, anything like that. How brown they are, how light they are, how red they are. We had nothing to do with that. Absolutely nothing. And the same goes for, pride and pride in race as well. And, those are things that I'm sure are more controversial than just sitting there and thinking about, yeah, that's right. I didn't have any, it's not something for me to be proud of because I didn't have anything to do with it. I need to be proud of my accomplishments where I go from there. And so that you can understand, but understanding with doing away with Puerto Rican Day and Greek festival and all these things, celebrating heritage. I'm all for that. I'm all for traditional dinners from a certain place on earth. But we cannot put pride into where we were born either, because we didn't have anything to do with that. We were far too young to decide where we wanted to live. It's probably why I prefer the name Wiggly to the name Richard. My parents didn't even know me when they named me that. They didn't know anything about me. So I like the name Wiggly a lot better. I think it fits me more. I'm more comfortable with it. And it's something that my mother doesn't call me. So, I got that going for it as well. Because when my mother calls me by my name, it's usually like, what? So I'm all for... this is what we ate when I was young, but realizing that, realize, let's celebrate traditions. I'm not above tradition. I am above superstition, unless we turn that superstition into calling it what it is, a superstition of our tradition. Then I'm off and I'm for it. We think about cultures that say excel in math. Now, there's a difference between saying that this area of the globe excels in math and saying that everyone in this area of the globe excels in math. That's the difference between racism and observation and statistics. So if we take a look at places in Asia like Japan, where you have a high degree of understanding of mathematics, and very few people do not believe in evolution. They still have horoscopes like crazy. They believe in horoscopes and ghost stories and things like this. So you still have a high degree of certain types of superstitions in there. But I choose to relish some of those superstitions because I think it's cool. I think it's cool to take a ribbon that has some kanji on it and throw it at a demon's head, and when it sticks to their foreheads, they evaporate into mist. I think that's fantastically cool. I also love, you know, I love the American iterations of classics like Frankenstein. You know, I love the Universal Frankenstein. I don't know if I watched this before I did the last episode, but I watched the Mary Shelley version of Frankenstein, and it's supposed to follow more closely with the book, but it wasn't so enjoyable. And I don't know if I told you. I don't think I told you this, but the greatest thing about Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, outside of the fact that there's adopted incest in it with the doctor marrying and copulating with his adopted sister. She was a child when they adopted her. So that's kind of you know, weird. But let's think about the well-to-do in that era. Let's think about the kings and the queens and the things like this and the incest going on to keep it in the family line, their bloodline, as it were. Which I have an interesting story on bloodlines as well, which hopefully we could talk about sometime. But the best part of that has got to be De Niro as the monster, because his portrayal of the monster is amazing. Because I think he tried to bring in some of the Karloffian monster. Of course, the monster in the first episode didn't speak. Then in the second, in Bride he spoke. And that's the thing about the first Frankenstein book, is that he creates the bride sort of right away as well. And in Mary Shelley, in her version, in her book of Frankenstein, he creates the man and then the woman sort of right away. But in the Universal, they save that for the second movie. And Karloff thought it was a horrible idea to make the monster speak, evidently not reading a book. And he thought as soon as you do that, he might as well put on a top hat and tails and shuffle off to Buffalo, which is humorous in retrospect in Young Frankenstein. But so De Niro as the monster is just amazing, because he's like, soul? Do I even have a soul? He breaks characters. And he's like a Hasidic Jew from Brooklyn. You know, it's really funny. Where was I in that? I know I was talking about race. Oh yeah, so that's my example of heritage and translations and things I like from cultures. But I would rather, you know, the problem with culture here is the same problem that we see everywhere with wars. We draw these lines on a map. There are no lines. When I went to from Pennsylvania to Ohio, I didn't see any lines. I saw a sign that said, "Welcome to Ohio." But I didn't see a giant line going through the road. I guess they can draw them, but it doesn't really mean anything. You could step over the line. These territories, these are creations of policy, of politics, of greed. But they don't really exist. They do not really exist. Longitude, latitude mean nothing, except if you want to scientifically, just like we scientifically understand our our you know, senses. Well, it wouldn't even be in scientific, I mean, arcs and degrees and minutes and stuff like this. It's more cartological, I guess, to say, well, meet me over here, and then you can point to these two intersecting non-existing lines. You know, once again, we're dipping into a utopian type of thing. We're dipping into one world ideology. We're dipping in ideologies. But it doesn't matter. These are all, you know, if we all realize that there's really no difference between any of us, and if there is a difference, there's very little we could have ever done about it in our when we came out of this earth, you know. Yes, I have more of a global understanding. I have more of a global approach to the to this earth now, and it even goes beyond global things into things that we forget about, like the things that we share this planet with, you know, trees, grass, worms, germs. Speaking of germs, let me diverge for 30 seconds here. A fascinating article in the new magazine ID. ID, Ideas and Discoveries. Check out this magazine. Is World History One Big Lie? 8 Shocking Secrets of the Past Revealed. That's the reason I picked it up. But that is not what I found really great. One of the things that we're finding out about high colonics being not so good for you, because it kills the bad bacteria that are in your body. But wow, I did not know this. Our 100 trillion housemates. I talked about a lot of these types of things before. How bacteria is the number one thing on this planet, and you know, first I said God was probably a worm, since that's how we all started, really, as worms. But we actually probably started as bacteria, and our second immune system, bacteria. How eventually we will have more bacterial cells than human cells, I believe, in our bodies. And it talks about this one little breakdown is really great. Armpit, 2 million bacteria. Even our best deodorant can't stop the giant army of bacteria that settle here. Proteobacteria, which thrive in this damp environment, account for 25% of all human skin bacteria and can also be found in the digestive tract. Forehead, 200,000 bacteria, and an especially large number of Corynebacteria can be found on the forehead, where they break down fat from the skin's sebaceous glands into fatty acids, thereby inhibiting germ growth. The ear has 1 million bacteria. The outer ear contains a disproportionately large amount of cyanobacteria compared to the rest of the body. It's particularly puzzling because this type of bacteria is often found in plants. So there you go with that. The hand has 1,000 bacteria. About 150 types of bacteria may be found on our hands. So women actually carry more types of bacteria on their hands than men, because a woman's skin contains fewer germ-killing acids. Now, see, the problem here is that, you know, we always don't want to shake hands. We don't want to touch a doorknob. But many of these bacteria are actually helpful. The back has 300 bacteria, probably the least amount of bacteria that I see, yep, on the body. The skin on our back and face contain a very large number of bacteria, which help regulate sebaceous gland activities, but can sometimes cause acne. So there you go, your bacne is from The stomach has 10,000 bacteria. It seems nothing could survive in the stomach acid, but H. pylori adheres to the stomach lining. It regulates appetite and can protect against asthma. but it can also cause ulcers. Unlike when Oscar Madison gets ulcers from stress. Well, you know that, of course, is bacteria, and ulcers are not caused by stress. They may be agitated by you contracting your belly areas. Foot has 100 to 1,000 bacteria. Bacteria feel especially comfortable between our toes, where staphylococci. I guess it's staph infection, but I just don't understand how it's staphylococci. Corny. Why is everything named after corn? Corynebacteria and micrococcinae rule. Caca. The 100 to 5,000 bacteria on our forearm, bacteria on our skin, form a protective coating that defends us against harmful microorganisms. The forearm holds a particularly large amount of staphylococci, which is why you get staph infection on your elbow, I guess, and lipotychic acid. They really. I wish I was a doctor or somebody studying a biologist or something. Prevents skin cell inflammation. So there you go. That prevents skin cell inflammation. Now the biggest winner here is 10 billion bacteria in our intestines. The intestine is the hot spot for internal bacteria because food is digested and metabolized here. Some bacteroidetes and phylum containing bacteria that live in our guts and in our skin may possess the ability to prevent obesity. How about that? Only 10% of us is truly us. When you're born, I think you don't have anything, and then you accumulate all these outside bacteria in a very short time. So it's very, very good stuff here. I still haven't read what I purchased it for or the other great articles, but I highly recommend that. So that doesn't help prove anything of what I've said in the past, except maybe one thing that I can't recall. But I know I've talked about history, which probably, you know, many people have said before, and many of these other things I'm sure people have said before, but not quite in the way that I've said them, I believe. And many of these conclusions I've reached by myself just by thinking about it. And then learning later that people have thought of this, you know, many years, thousands of years in the case of Epicurus before I have. But I just picked up Race and Reality by, who wrote this? Guy Harrison. So I just picked that up in Kindle form. I'm going to be reading that soon. I can't wait to delve into that. Race and Reality, What Everyone Should Know About Our Biological Diversity. This is good. This is very good stuff, in my opinion. A lot of critics of the book, I don't think, understand where it's coming from and may perhaps think themselves to have been in control of their parents fucking each other. Having pride in that bullshit that I've just explained before. But if you remember when I talked about the human genome gimmick that the National Geographic was putting on, and Chiz took a part in to find out her path out of Africa, and how I said that racists rednecks now have to say, "Hey, boy, why don't you go back to where I came from?" And this further illustrates how one of the things I heard spoken about by the author was I don't know what part of the African continent these people were from, but they were people that looked like they could have been brothers, and they only were from a few miles apart, and they tested their DNA or genes or what have you, and found, and then they tested I don't want to speak stupidly about this, but I'm going to say their DNA. Okay, I'm going to go with that because I believe that's what it was, but it might have been RNA. No, it might have been RNA. It was either DNA or RNA, and they tested that of the same things of a person that you would consider white, and from, I believe, America or the UK, and a person that you may, a person that you may consider to be Asian. And they found out that the person that you would consider Asian and the person that you can consider white were more genetically similar than the two people that looked like they could have been brothers that lived a mile away from each other. And this draws on the racial diversity and the fantastic genetic diversity of people in Africa and people that have darker, more brown skin, more of those melatonin, I believe. Like I said, I'm getting tired, so I probably screw a lot of things up. But there's the greatest diversity among people from the motherland, if you will. And so it really puts – it doesn't put an end to racism like the way that I have approached it, which is here we are. We had no we did not partake. We didn't, how do I say it in Trap Rap? A pry in a mine on flesh and bone. How can you hate by a look at the skin? Genius is a genius and a bum is a bum. Individual, not the family that it come from. See me as a creative, see me as a fool. I don't even remember. This is how burnt out I'm getting. I can't even do my own things. But you know, have pride in what you've created. We had no control over creating ourselves, as putting our parents together and coming out as this. So that's more so how I created. Here we are. Let's go from here. Not with things that we had no control over, or no part of, or cannot take credit for. And of course, with the genome theme, we all come from the same place, so we're all related. So shut the fuck up. But this really shows that even biologically speaking, although we may look different, if we go to places, this is the whole problem with the Middle East. You look at people, and if you dressed them similarly, you wouldn't know who was from what tribe, where, or what have you, because it's all these blurred lines of self-imposed states and countries and like that. You know, there's no differences. And this really shows biologically and genetically that there really are no differences. That people who we might consider black are so spread across the biological spectrum, genetic spectrum, that you would have to create so many races of just people who are dark or not even dark. There may be people who we would consider of negroid, and that was the technical term when I was a kid, and this was dealing with a Caucasoid, negroid, Mongolian. So those were like the types of races you could come from initially, and you could have people that display these types of characteristics in facial features and things like that, but their skin tones are the most diverse, or most incredibly diverse of anyone's. Funny line from Blazing Saddles, Mel Brooks voicing the one Native American, the one Indian, as they're circling the wagons, and he goes, "Hoy, they're darker than us." Speaking about the sheriff, the sheriff's family was going through the town. That's what, going across the desert, and he says that of the sheriff, who is a black person, and I say that in air quotes now that I know the truth. So, you know, it's really good stuff. I can't wait to read it. I just heard the author talk about it. And it's nice. I can't wait to see his take on this. And that it's all really just ideology. So that sort of ties in with things I have. And also this, the newest version, the newest episode of Skeptic magazine went out of California. The man who invented flying saucers, plus who believes that aliens landed at Roswell. I haven't done, that was, they did a very good study through an anonymous telephone poll of who believes in that aliens and they go into that there in aliens crash at Roswell and that there was a government cover-up. Those are the two distinct questions, but that UFOs I've often spoken about, anyone that has seen a flying saucer has seen a error, a blooper from a news reporter because of his reporting his transaction transcription of blah, 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 blah. Kenneth Arnold's encounter, let's say, when he said that he saw this. But he says it actually predates Kenneth Arnold with this artist that drew the covers for the Pulp Fiction, which is probably what I meant when I was talking about Goofball McGee there, the creator of Scientology, L. Ron Hubbard, writing a lot of these science fiction gimmicks, and maybe even science wonder stories. Maybe even he wrote some articles in these things that the guy did illustrations for, but he was responsible for drawing a lot of disc-shaped craft, although you know, some of them have like chainsaws around them, and they're quite different than what we say. Some have, this one has tractor treads on the bottom of it, two treads like a tank. This one has like a tail on the saucer. This one looks like a balloon, and this one has tentacles coming out of the top of it, grabbing up a building. And like I don't know what's that, that's in the bottom, some other type of fin or something. So he says that this is the fellow that really started drawing it and created this set. He talks about visual sets, I believe, without I can't even scan this, I'm so blown out and of course losing my voice. So I'm going to wrap it up soon. I didn't really get to talk about the good things. I'll try to sum it up. But here's another guy. But, you know, my take on it is, of course, Kenneth Arnold, when a reporter, Kenneth Arnold said he saw these boomerang things that were more hyperbola, talking about hyperbolas, hyperbolic in shape. And they were shaped like a boomerang, like a bat, like a batarang, actually. And they flew as, all right, shut up out there. They flew in a way that reminded him of skipping a tea saucer, a saucer that you put a, you know, a cup and saucer like for your tea. And if when you skip that across the a lake or a river or something like that, you know, when you skip rocks, that's what most of us are used to doing. Well, if you took a saucer and skipped it across, it would probably go further than a rock, and that's how it went, like up and down, as if it was skipping across a water. And of course, the reporter put down he saw flying saucers, which he didn't. And then all of a sudden, everyone was seeing flying saucers. And you know, it was just the Barney and Betty Hill anniversary, like a few days ago, I think the 18th or something. So that that's kind of neat. That hypnosis type of thing going on there, which doesn't have anything to do with this, but ties in with flying saucers, because I believe they saw flying saucers as well and went on one. If it wasn't a saucer, it was at least cigar shaped or smoking a pipe. Okay, Copernicus did that already. Let's talk about the virtues of Christianity, reasons that people give for Christianity, and reasons that people give for being a part of Scientology. I'm going to give two, and then I'm going to hang up because my minutes are running out. Two that I could think of. First, the reasons that people give for staying in Christianity or staying in religion in general is for community. People say community is a good thing, interacting with people, and that's why people would be in Scientology as well. You have a brotherhood there. And I'm sure in Islam as well too. You congregate, you interact with people, and I'm sure both of those groups would also say, and I know that Scientology especially, they're not afraid to toot their own horns when they give to relief efforts and things like this, donating money to different charities and helping with natural disasters and whatnot. Of course, they don't mind slipping a few books of Dianetics in there, a couple Good News Bibles, a few films, Kindles with the Bible on it, and iPads and things like this, and dropping pamphlets on the virtues of the loving traditions of Muhammad and beheadings and conquering in the name of the cross and curing homosexuality with vitamins and timeouts. But I digress. Community and giving. Well, let me tell you, there's a thing in the United States of America that I receive emails about almost every other day called Meetup, not M-E-A-T, but M-E-E-T, meetup.com. And I get invited to all types of critical thinking, humanistic type of events. And I normally look on there and it says 8 attending. Now, I know that there are more than 8 critical thinkers in this area, and I'm one of them, and I've never gone to an event yet. They even have things like drinking skeptically and things like that they go to, which would be wonderful to have these 8 people over to Sloppy Joe's because that's my maximum capacity. But there are events like this, and any time I see a relief effort by a organization that has no religious affiliations, will not proselytize at all, even the, you know, the logical things of being skeptical or atheist or whatever, what have you. I try to post links to that because then you are donating without the guilt of barraging people and harassing people with your sky god doctrine, dogma. Yeah. So there are organizations, if you want to join, if you look hard enough, you will find them. I also get invites, on the Facebook from places in Ireland that are getting together, and that's awesome. I can't attend, but they do exist. They might not exist in certain places where this is still considered heresy and apocryphal, and you will suffer imprisonment or worse. But for the majority of the free world, you can find places of community that do not necessarily need any type of religious affiliation or, asking for these dues to be paid. Now, some organizations I belong to, you do pay yearly, but you know where that goes to, you know. And you can volunteer for these places as well, but you're not forced to volunteer because you've depleted your bank fund trying to pay for new tech, new levels of tech. And I really don't think, I've stated this last time too, one of my biggest problems with the truth, and if you have the truth, if you're charging people for it and you won't even give it away at all, and hope that you make money later, I think that is I don't know if you can consider yourself part of humanity. I don't charge for this show. I'm not even bringing, you know, I'm bringing poop compared to what other people say is out there and that they know and then they charge for. So if I'm giving my stuff away that I don't think is as good as theirs, I don't know how they could consider self part of the human race and not tell people how they can be happier and help share that with them. Because they say that they want to cure the world. Well, yeah, at what price? At what price? The same with the major religions that have, you know, spread their good news via the sword and slaughter and imprisonment and burning at the stake. And even worse. So there, that's my answer to a sense of community. It's nothing. A sense of community is not intrinsic to Scientology. It's not intrinsic to Christianity. It's not intrinsic to Judaism or Islam or any other organized religion that you can think of. The other thing that I hear mostly espoused by Scientology is that, you know, I can get you off of drugs. I can get you off of drugs. I don't want to even talk about Hubbard's relationship to drinking or drugs or smoking, but Tom Cruise definitely jumps up and down on Kurt Loder or whoever it was. What's his name? Can't think of his name now. But, you know, he's jumping up and down. He says, you know, I can get you off of drugs. I can get you off of alcohol. You know, AA is based around turning over things that you are not strong enough to fight off to a higher power to help you with these things or something of that nature, which I cannot fully recall at this moment. And there are other things like that that you know, people find replacements for drinking through religion or drugs through religion or things like this. Well, I could say the same thing for music, although you don't usually go to an Alcoholics Anonymous and pick up a guitar and start playing. But, you know, I've spoken about it before. My friend Chrissy, after a misunderstanding back in high school, showed up at one of my Epicurean shows in my basement with his guitar. I told him to come see me because I knew he played guitar. And I told him to come see my group do their first show. He showed up with his guitar, and he was part of a drug addict crew, some stoner, not even worse than stoners. I can't remember. They just called them druggies, I guess. And he showed up with his guitar, and then not too long after joining Epicurean, I told him to join the group. Within a few months, he had dumped all of his friends who had since landed in jail or worse, and you know, theft and everything else, burglaries and everything else like that. So they had gone poo-poo ways. He said, "F you, I got music, I'm part of a band now," and that got him out of those bad situations. I've spoken about it many times, how I have gotten people to stop smoking, and once again, I mean, I couldn't stop anyone from smoking, but how people have, you know, accredited me to helping them stop smoking. And it is not a technique, it is just the truth. When I met certain girlfriends who even would later become my wife, and they were smokers, and I simply said to them that, you know, you can do whatever you want, but I really love you, and I want you to live. And, you know, smoking, and I didn't say this to them, but I mean, it's it's crazily obvious that smoking will kill people, you know, and sometimes horrible deaths. And, you know, that's not even in contention by even the most stupid. It is a known way to murder yourself. And it might happen to you. So I'd rather that you be around. And I'd rather that spend time with you, spend my life with you. But here's something that I found on Judge Mathis. Now, so if you think that you need Scientology to help you get off drugs or alcohol, if you think that you need you know, some type of higher power to get off of alcohol, and my friends are in recovery that I know, and they'll be in recovery for the rest of their lives. I know it's a lifelong process. Fortunately, I could tell you right away, and before I get into this, I could tell you right away a very easy way to not do drugs, to not do alcohol, to not smoke, and it's the same way I do it. Don't do it. But that comes easy for me to say because I don't know what it's like to be addicted to things, things like that. I know what it's like to be addicted to maybe comics, but I always thought that I read comics as I like to read. I like to collect things, obviously, but I never saw it as a collection. I folded my comics, you know. If I got toys, I took them out of the wrapper. I'm not a collector like that. I'm not a toy boy or something of that nature. But still, you know, there were things I had to put a cap on dealing with money in the past. So, you know, I know that, but with these more destructive things, I don't know. Although my Thaidai, a person in my band as well, said that I did just as many stupid things as not drinking or smoking. And there's Penn Jillette also always espousing that he's never taken a drink. He's never smoked, done any drugs or anything like that. But I'm sure he's done a lot stupid things too, like probably, you know, locking himself in a milk jug and whatever it is, milk can, and not really knowing how to get out of it, and a lot of other crazy things that I've done. But that's not in an addictive type of way, as far as I know. So that's how I deal with it. But as I mentioned, there's a lot of other ways to replace one thing, replace a negative thing with a positive thing. And that's something that I'm not sure that, you know, appealing to a higher power gets you. There are so many more things. One of the big reasons that I don't spend a lot of time drinking and stuff like that, although I try to, is because I just got too many things to do, and I need to be sober for those. When I was younger, I didn't drink because I didn't do drugs because I always thought I had an important decision that I would have to make. I thought of myself as like a king with a broken crown. I had no one that I ruled over, but I always thought that I'd have to make a decision that was important as a decision that a king might have to make. And I didn't want that to be impaired. So you can replace negative things with positive things, and you don't need Tom Cruise to show you how to do that. In fact, there was one thing. I was watching Judge Mathis. I love my judge shows. I was watching Judge Mathis the other day, and he was reading a letter that a 7-year-old wrote to her mother. Her mother was in recovery as well. She was an alcoholic. Never knew she was an alcoholic. Very, very pretty young girl. And the 7-year-old wrote this, and it just brought me to freaking tears. And she wrote, "Mommy, are you going to drink? Do not drink. You will die. I love you." And I know I didn't read it as movingly as Judge Mathis did, which is because he read it, you know, for the first time, most likely aloud there. I'm reading it after knowing what it stated, but I know for sure if I had a 7-year-old girl and she wrote me that letter, I would be incredibly motivated to not drink if it was a problem for me. So, friends, be good to one another. Don't be a jerk all the time. I definitely care, even though I might never even know your name. I definitely will never. There are so many people that listen to this show that I have no idea who you are out there. I don't know if you're listening so that you can one day punch me in the face, or if you're listening and you love it. You must, because the numbers stay consistent and go up at times. So thank you very much for taking all this time to listen to me. I'm going to go out with something. You know what? I just found out that Betty Boo is on the Twitter, BooMania1, if you want to check her out and follow her twits. She doesn't really pay me no never mind, and I'm following in popularity among my Twitterer to the stars. Although Henry Winkler got back in touch with me once. Since then, it's rough getting through to the celebs, and who really cares? But I wish that BooMania would have responded to me. I'm gonna leave. I'm gonna do something illegal again. So here you go with your legalities. I gotta tell you, I don't even know if it's legal anymore. But I want to leave with a Betty Boo song because I need a little boo in my life every day. And I'm not sure what I'm going to play. Let's see. Yeah. Curly and Girly. And, it has whistling in it. Chiz hates whistling. I know. I'm gonna leave you with one of my favorites. It was something I have to play anytime I want to get my own party started in my room, raising the roof. All alone. It's sort of like solo karaoke, but it's a lot more sad, I think. No, it cannot be. It cannot be a sad. This is Skin Tight by Betty Boo off of the album Grr, It's Betty Boo. I'm Wiggly, a Wiggly World.